Welcome to the Overshare Show. I'm Tony, and today we're going to be talking to Billy Upski-Wimsatt. Billy is a longtime activist and actually someone who's inspired me quite a bit in my own life. He wrote a book called No More Prisons, which I read when I was 20 years old, and it genuinely changed my life. Now, I'm not saying that in a kiss-assy way or in a dramatic way. It just changed the way I thought. Now, when I read this book, I was 20 years old, and my tendency was to believe everything I was told by an adult. So if an adult said something, I would say to myself, this has to be true. Now, that might sound naive, and looking back on it, I'm like, wow, Tony, what was wrong with you? But at the same time, this was 2000. This was before the internet was this massive conglomeration of information that it is today. So in 2000, yeah, the internet existed, but more for nerds and chat rooms. You know, so I just didn't have access to the same type of information that we have right now. So at 20 years old, I read this book and suddenly I realized, hey, wait a minute. Maybe not everything I was told is true. Maybe people have motives. Maybe politics and history has an agenda that I'm not quite aware of. Maybe money has a lot more to do with how decisions are made than I previously understood. So I owe a lot to Billy for opening up my eyes and putting me on a trajectory of questioning everything. And I do think that in order to participate in politics and in the world around you in a genuine way, you have to question everything you are told and be a part of the dialogue. So today we're going to discuss with Billy how to raise a revolutionary. He's a new dad, he has this beautiful baby girl, and I wanted to know what his plans were. Are you going to raise your child to have the same values that you do? And if so, how? Because I don't know if you've noticed, the world is kind of a trash can. And we're going to be extinct pretty soon. So if we were to raise our kids to have a true revolutionary spirit, I do think that that is going to at least somewhat give us a chance for survival. So I really enjoyed this conversation with Billy, and I hope you do too. Thank you. Hi, welcome to the Overshare Show. Today, we're with Billy Upski-Wimsatt, who I've known for quite a long time. He is the author of Bomb the Suburbs, No More Prisons, which was a huge book in my life and a major inspiration. He was also author of Wait, Please Don't Bomb the Suburbs. And he's the founder of the League of Pissed Off Voters and the League of Young Voters. And he is also currently working on Game Changers Lab, right?
Yeah, Game Changer Labs. Okay. Can you make up any other wacky things for me to associate with?
So Billy is an activist and a revolutionary, and he has been for, you know, from what I understand, most of his life, most of his adult life. So today we're going to be talking about raising a revolutionary and how to raise your child with political values. So let's start talking about you and your past a little, Billy. How did you get interested in politics and wanting to be an activist?
Wow. Well, see, this kind of goes to the heart of parenting, which is part of why I was terrified to have a child in the first place, because of my own, you know, I was such a hellion as a child for my own parents. But I feel like in fourth grade, I heard, you know, from our teacher that there were nuclear weapons. Miss Kalk, my fourth grade teacher, told us that, you know, there was these nuclear weapons and that, you know, Russia had like a nuke pointed at Chicago. And I was like, are you kidding me? Like, wait, the grownups are like really stupid, you know, like,
right.
I can't believe that this would happen. Like, wait, what do you mean? Like my whole city and everything I care about could be destroyed. And like, we're just like supposed to do math and like, you know, read Hardy Boys books. Like, what the hell? You know, I'm trying to like be, you know, parent friendly, PG friendly right here.
Oh, I know. It's really hard not to drop F bombs.
Yeah. So I was like, oh my God, we have to like revolt
right
now. And I organized my fourth grade class, or at least, you know, my friends, And we made like these signs that said peace or destruction, and it had like a picture of Chicago being blown up. And we walked around the neighborhood like yelling and having a rally.
That is epic.
So, but then it kind of went downhill from there, because then I realized that, you know, all the nice liberal white people that were like, you know, were like super racist and like, that, you know, there were just all these like lies and all this fear and whatever about, specifically about black people in the South Side of Chicago. And like, oh my God, don't cross that, you know, 61st Street and King, you know, King Drive, because you'll die, and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And, so I basically like, you know, I basically just decided I was a grown up and all the grown ups were stupid, and I was gonna be like, you know, graffiti writer, and like, you know, so I just like didn't totally disobeyed my parents. I just like was out all night, all over the city, and yeah. But when I was like 12, I decided that I was, you know, I was just
a grown up. So you had a problem with authority, essentially, because the authority that you saw as at one point legitimate was the same authority that was, you know, pointing bombs at your hometown, because, you know, it's like the parents of the adult world, they're also making that decision.
Right. I was disappointed in my parents and in the adult world. And so I was like, okay, I'm just this authority is officially
a farce.
Yeah, like I'm just not obeying anything. I'm just going to do what I think I should do. Which, you know, when I think about my daughter, my incredible 9-month-old daughter, Analia, and I think about, you know, if she followed the same trajectory and she was like running around New York City at, you know, 4 a.m. in whatever neighborhood, like, I mean, that's kind of terrifying.
Right. I mean, do you feel that, how were your parents reacting to you? Were part of them just like, well, that's Billy, he's going to do what he's going to do? Or were they really upset?
No, I put them, like, they were up all night wondering where I was. You know, it was, I put them through hell. Like, I, you know, my mom, like, if you say the word graffiti, she'd like, has PTSD.
And she like weeps. She's like, why did they take my son from me? Those graffiti artists.
No, but we're really close now.
Right.
You know, we're, you know, I just, you know, I love them like crazily.
So part of your activism was this rebellion against the status quo of the adult world. And I mean, how did that start manifesting into being an author? I mean, you at one point you weren't just running around the streets. You were saying, I'm going to be a voice for my generation. So how did you become inspired to do that?
Well, it all went together. You know, it was like from fourth grade, literally, from that to like writing graffiti, to writing political graffiti, to, you know, I got arrested so many times. Like when I was, by the time I was 14, I'd been arrested like 8 times. So I, you know, I got put on probation because they didn't put white kids in the Audi home. Like I would have gone to juvie, but they were like, we don't put white kids in there.
Right.
Literally.
They told you that.
But
that was just the understanding. Yeah.
Thing. And so I had to do something else with myself. So I made like a homemade newspaper and I started taping that all over the subways and buses in Chicago. So
what was in the newspaper?
I was just, you know, it was everything from, I don't know. It was just so much crazy stuff. It was like, I don't know. I can't even explain it.
Was it your like conspiracy theories about the world? Were you writing it? Was it your newspaper that you would write?
Yeah, but it was also interviewing lots of people.
Wow.
You know?
Yeah.
It was cool. And it was like crazy art and whatever. It was like whatever you imagine a crazy 14-year-old is going to put together. So, and then, but anyway, just to like fast forward to my daughter.
Yeah.
Like, oh, God, I love her so much. It's like, oh, my God. You know, like, it's like I can't, it's indescribable. you know?
But did you know you wanted to have a child?
No. I actually, like, pretty much didn't want to have a child, you know? And maybe I'm supposed to be, like, feel like a bad person for saying that. But I think, you know, like, I also started reading about the environment. And it was this list, you know, I was, like, really, like, super crazy recycling kid, you know? I was, like, recycling, picking up bottles and stuff. And, like, I don't want the world to be destroyed, you know?
Yeah.
And so, so I read this thing that's, like, what are the top things you can do to, like, not destroy the earth? And it was, like, recycling was, like, number 4 or 5. And, like, ahead of that was, like, don't have a American kid, you know?
Right.
That was, like, number 1. And I was, like, oh, that's number 1. I'm obviously not going to have an American kid. And it was, like, be vegetarian, don't drive a car, you know, et cetera. I was, like, oh, that's even before recycling. Wow. Well, obviously I'm going to do all those things. So, you know, I do believe, you know, there are 7 billion kids in the world. Like, there's so many kids that need love.
Wait, there's 7 billion people.
Yeah, well, they're, I don't know, they're children of God.
Yeah.
They're all kids.
Right.
Yeah, it's kind of when you're a parent, you start to see everyone as, like, someone's kids.
Right.
You know?
There's so, I love that. That's beautiful.
And, yeah, and so there's so many people that need love and so many kids that need love. And I always just felt like I don't really need to create my own, you know, biological kids. Because they're all my kids, you know?
And then what made you change your mind?
Oh, falling in love and, you know, and...
Your wife wanted a child.
Yeah.
Right?
Lenore was, it was very clear, you know, like...
We're doing this.
Yeah. And so I was like, I'm open to it.
Right.
Know? And because, you know, I mean, like, if I didn't feel like the world were in such terrible shape and... that I had to, like, spend, you know, all my time trying to do something about it. Like, I'd want to have 10 kids. I mean, their kids are so, you know, I mean, it's such a miracle. Like, you look at this person and you're like, whoa, you have part of my DNA and part of Lenore's DNA. And, like, who are you? You know, I'm like, I want to have 10 more of you and, like, see what they all turn out like.
Right.
You know, I mean, like, and, you know... Yeah. So, well, one is plenty. You know?
One is plenty.
One is plenty. And I'm an only child, and I think only child are awesome.
Oh, I'm glad to hear that.
Because you know what? Let me tell you something. Like, part of why I am the way I am, I think, is because, you know, I really wanted a brother or sister, but I couldn't, you know, like, my mom was, like, not trying to have another kid. And so,
especially not after.
Yeah, especially
your teenage
not after.
Years. She's oh, like, you really ruined that.
No, but I was terrible. Like, I was like one of the stories is like my mom was trying to give me a bath and we lived on the second floor of this apartment and I was like throwing a huge fuss and somehow she turned around and then later my dad was like driving his car and like and was driving onto our street and here's this baby like walking out crawling out into the street and like we don't know how I got down the stairs or anything.
You but, just escaped.
Yeah.
You're just...
I was like a terror from day one. So I feel like so having a child was it's terrifying for on so many levels. It's like, what if something happens to them? What if they're, you know, what if?
Well, your love makes you vulnerable because you care about them.
Yeah.
And you want them to be safe, but at the same time, you want them to have some sort of freedom. And I mean, neither you or I are at that point where the kids are old enough where we're having to really grapple with that. But it is something that you have to build the foundation for, which is how do you have a child you can trust? I mean, on a certain level, your parents did a job with you where they could trust you and you were alive. And even if you were doing semi-subversive things, you were still really productive and you were making an impact in people's lives and you were spreading information. So, you know, how do you feel like you plan on instilling some of those values onto your daughter? Do you feel like this was just something that you gravitated towards or there was an outside influence that helped guide you or... You know, what's your trajectory? Like, how do you plan to make your daughter care about the same things that you care about, or is that even an agenda you have?
No, it is like so much. And, you know, I wish I could give you kind of my inspiring, this is what I'm doing, and, you know, but I'm not there yet, honestly. You know, it's just, I'm just kind of in awe of this, you know, this person who's like crawling and standing up on things and hitting everything, you know? So I think just to start with a couple of really simple cliche things, like, you know, I really want her to be the best her, and whatever that is, you know, whether she has anything in common with me and my kind of values and way of seeing the world. I mean, I really want her to find her own, whatever that is.
Voice.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, part of what I hear about your story is that you have this intense empathy for not only other people, but for the planet. And one thing that, you know, we can teach our children or be really proactive in exposing them to is this emotion of empathy. I mean, I think in many ways it's innate, or the capacity is innate, unless you're a total sociopath. But, you know, it's, do you see yourself, like, how have you inspired other people, or what are you thinking in terms of
yeah, that's just, what's
instilling
so confusing.
This idea of empathy?
That's what's so confusing, because I feel like, you know, I haven't wrapped my brain around yet, like, what it means to be a good parent to my own child in terms of substance, you know, not just like the baseline good parenting, you know? So I have no idea what it's going to be like. I mean, I'd actually like to ask, you know, that question to a lot of, you know, parents of older kids. Because, you know, at the opposite end of the spectrum of wanting my daughter to just grow up into whoever she's supposed to be is wanting to really influence her. Because, like, I kind of love my life and love, like, the, you know, all the kind of rules I've broken and paths I've chosen to want to, you know, to basically be awake.
Right.
To what is happening in the world. The beauty and the not beauty. You know, like, I don't, you know what's so interesting about most people who are like, quote unquote, activists or whatever? It's like the starting premise is like, oh yeah, the world is messed up and they're like dealing with the messed up of the world. Like, that's not my starting premise at all. My starting premise is the world is like unbelievably, amazingly, beautifully full of love, and that we as a species haven't, you know, like, adapted ourselves to like realizing how lucky we are, and so we do all this dumb shit that's like, can I curse on here? Is this?
Yeah, no, that's fine.
Okay,
yeah,
I'm trying to practice not cursing. It's really hard. But, you know, like, we do all this dumb stuff, because
we're not honoring the human experience.
Right, we're not. Okay. I'm going to tell you something funny. Okay, this kind of goes to, so every night I sing my daughter to sleep with this song. it just came to me out of nowhere, but it goes like, I'm gonna read you from the book of love. I'm gonna read you from the book of love. And it goes, chapter one of the book of love. The world was created from love. You know,
oh,
and then
love
it goes,
that.
It goes like chapter two, the animals of love, the people of love.
Yeah.
And then, but wait a minute. Chapter four.
Uh-oh.
Chapter four is when we forgot the love. Chapter four is when we forgot the love. And that's the chapter we're in, right? That's where, like, the state.
Yeah, that that's a good homonym, in. By the way, too.
Nice homonym?
Well, usage of the word four, you know.
Oh.
You didn't even realize that? Because it's chapter
four. Do you know what?
I've four
totally
got to
forgot.
Love.
Oh, my God. I forgot what a homonym is. Having a kid, I'm going to have to learn what a homonym is. It's so great.
You're like, stop speaking dirty to me.
But wait. So chapter five. Okay, so it goes. Chapter five is when we bring back the love. Chapter five is when we brought back the love. You know, so it's like that is my understanding of like everything, like the story, like the fact that there's life in this like universe of dead planets is like so unbelievably amazing and incredible and beautiful. And like, that is reality. Like when people are like, it's, you know, people have the wrong framework of like, people are like, well, reality stinks, but I'm an optimist anyway. Like, no, 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 full stop. No, that is not how the world is. That's not what it is.
Right.
Wrong.
Right.
Like, reality is so unbelievably amazing. And the biggest thing that's like
keeping us from acknowledging it.
Yeah, is that we can't see it. It's hard to like, you know, which is why people meditate every day and why people have, you know, all these like practices and religion to, just to remember how lucky we are.
Right.
Right. And how really like all of life is just based on love.
Right.
Based on like God, love, life, same thing. Right. And so when we get away from that is when all the problems start, you know? And so for me, what, you know, what my quote unquote activism is really at its essence, just trying to remember that and trying to get everything back in line with reality.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Because it's like we, all the bad stuff is like actually these distortions of reality that people create because they didn't get love, or they're afraid of love, or they've been hurt, or, you know, or they just, they're not getting it, you know? So for me, it's like, that's the foundation of everything for me, of everything in the world and of everything that I try, you know, try to like act on, you know, every day, and how I try to like treat myself and treat people and treat the earth, you know? And so, and I feel like that is, and that's what's so profound about being a parent, you know, it's like you get to like try to see this with fresh eyes all again through the eyes of this incredible other person.
Right. You know? And so she awakens this sense of awe and the sense of wonder of reality. But one of the things that you said that made think is this idea that parenting in and of itself is a form of activism, because if you are a focused parent and are showing your child ample love, ample empathy, compassion, and you're raising a human being who is aware and awake and wants to be an asset to the planet and the humans around them, that's the greatest activism you can almost accomplish. I mean, it's like this idea of a ripple effect. Like, okay, I've created this ripple, and this ripple is going to ripple out positivity. And then the other thing I wanted to say, and this is what I kind of wanted to ask you about, you know, one of the things I struggle with is how mundane parenting is.
Yes.
You know, every night it's the same routine of putting her to bed, and she wakes up, and there's a lot of, I mean, the boredom of it or the repetition of it sometimes makes me personally lose that sense of awe and wonder, because it's like, what's today like? Today's kind of like yesterday.
Yeah.
So how has having a child impacted your activism?
Well, so that's the paradox. It's like, you know, for me, like having a kid was so big, was such a big deal. It was like, it's actually like being God.
Right.
You know, like you're creating life.
Right. And this person sees you as a God too.
Yeah. It's unbelievably, it's an unbelievably kind of power. It's the most incredible thing that you could do. Almost so incredible that I was like, I'm not even going to go there. You know, like,
right.
I'm like, I'm content with all the incredibleness, you know, in life they can be experienced, you know, without that. So experiencing that, you know, I was like, okay, well, obviously, you know, when Lenore gets pregnant, you know, and when, you know, this child comes, I'm going to become like the perfect human, right? Because I want to be so perfect for my daughter. Like I'm going to exercise every night, and I made up all these like rituals, and, you know, I'm going to blah, 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 you know, be so perfect for her. I'm going to recycle everything and I'm going to, you know, not use potty language. You know, I mean, you have this like expectation of how good you want to be.
Right.
For, you know, for your daughter. And then it totally doesn't happen.
No, it's really hard.
I'm like, wait a minute. Having a kid didn't make me
perfect.
Like,
I'm not perfect... an uber human now.
Yeah. I'm like, oh, and then it's, you know, it's all the things you said, the mundaneness plus the fact that you're not sleeping enough and you don't have enough time to get your work done and, you know, or like take a shower half the time, you know, it's like, and so you actually feel in many ways like crappier.
Yeah.
You know, like your body is crappier. It's like all this stuff and you're getting old and you feel like you don't remember who you are anymore because you're like so focused on like this other person. And so, yeah, so it's, so that there's the hard part.
Right. And it's interesting. I mean, your baby's still 9 months, so she's young. And I think back to where I was when my kid was 9 months and there was this, like, I still didn't know how to necessarily integrate her into my life. And I was just kind of living her life. And I was catering everything to her life. And it's funny, the joy about them aging is that I figured out how, okay, so she's going to come do yoga with me. It's not like you're going to be a part of these things that I need to do to be a whole person, you know. We're going to do yoga together and you're just going to hang out. And sometimes you're going to crawl on me and be annoying and sometimes you're going to play and be cool. And like now that she's in school, I have more independence because you're at school and I can get more work done. And the days I realize that are hardest for me is like if I don't feel like I've done like these base things that I needed to do, I can't be present with her.
Yeah.
But if I've done those things, I'm much more able to be present. And it's interesting, like the activist personality is often somebody who forgets themselves. You know, like I remember there was a time where you slept under your desk, not just like once, but like you lived under your desk. So I think there's already this like psychology of forgetting yourself. And so I wonder how, you know, this parenting journey that you kind of thought like, oh, this is going to make me remember myself, how it really can make you remember yourself as she starts to age and prioritize yourself because a happy you is going to be healthier for her and your time together with her.
Yeah. I love this show you're doing, this overshare, like it's so brilliant and it's so, I'm so like, it's scary, you know,
right?
It's scary to talk about parenting and your kid. Like there's so many judgments that like that I have of myself, let alone that anyone else might have, you know. And and so I feel like what was the question again?
Oh, it's just like, I really love this intention that you had. Like, this being is going to help me be the best me and prioritize me. But she's still, now she's your priority and you're like, oh, I don't have time for me.
Yeah.
So it's like how, you know, like integrating her
self-care
in your life. Yeah, so you self-care more.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, so I think there are little things from like, you know, like, she likes to be like thrown up in the air and that's also good exercise. You know?
You're like, just 40 more reps, girl. 40 more reps.
You know? And it's like, and like getting down on the ground and playing, you know?
It's good stretching.
It's good. Like she is so buff, you know, like, cause she crawls all the time. And,
right.
You know? So, yeah. So I feel like, but I haven't gone to the gym in weeks. You know, I feel like a wreck, you know, and I'm like behind on all these things and deadlines and, you know, so I just feel like.
I mean, has she shifted your priorities in a way that you're prepared for or?
Well, to be really honest, it kind of feels like there's a war between these like three or four competing things. There's like her, there's sleep,
right,
and there's work,
right,
and then there's like relationship and friendships and everything else.
Right. You
know? And it's like those four things are at war with each other.
Right.
In terms of time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know? And so, you know, on a good day, like you get some of all of it and it seems great. But like, I don't know, the loss of sleep alone just makes everything suck.
Yeah. You know? Is she waking up a lot?
She's sort of back and forth. We had her sleeping through the night and now she's like, you know, waking up and wanting to be fat again. I think she's having a growth spurt or something.
Right.
So, yeah. But
just so you know, you're almost out of that.
Oh, yeah.
I just really want you to know that. Like, okay. I had a horrible time with sleep and I was becoming crazy. I was like a Buddhist monk. My kid was such a jerk. At times, she would just like wake up 30 times a night. It was insane.
Wow.
And because I was breastfeeding her, like that's, she was like, hey, let's do that again.
Wow.
It was the worst hell. But, you know, now it's not a problem at all. So it's funny. That's one thing I want to say and like remind you or any parent and remind myself, everything is a phase.
Yeah.
You know, so this something something will always suck, but it's not always the same thing. And that's how you keep them alive. Because it's like, they always, this is a new thing that sucks. So at least the other thing that sucked is gone. And that's, you know, it sustains the love. It sustains the compassion. Because it'll be a phase. It'll be over soon.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're almost out of the woods.
Yeah. Yeah. So, okay. So I'm trying to think about your raising a revolutionary thing. Because
yeah.
I haven't.
Yeah, you haven't answered that. You're like, I don't know. Raise your own revolutionary. I don't know what I'm doing.
No, but I think. I'm trying to really think about that.
Yeah.
And I mean, because there's so much opportunity as a parent.
Yes.
For things to be transformative. Like, I remember that thing you wrote, like, didn't you write a letter, like, a mother of a daughter's letter to a mother of a son?
Yes, something I did.
Like,
yeah.
Like, you better raise that son right.
Because yeah, thanks.
That son is going to be interacting with my daughter.
Yeah, son not rape
that.
Her? Thanks.
I'm feeling that. Like, I'm like, every time I see little boys, I'm like, okay,
yeah.
You know, your parents, you better do this right because my daughter is going to have to interact with you as a grown up.
I know. And I really don't want you to beat her ever or rape her.
But, well, that's not happening because I will like.
Yeah, you will find them.
Yeah, that's not.
But I know what you mean. It's like you as a parent of a daughter. It's,
but you also can't control anything.
You can't control anything.
You have no control. It's so
But
terrifying.
The one thing that you can do, and like this goes back to the original idea, is like raising a revolutionary. And maybe what we should talk about is what are revolutionary values. Mm-hmm. You know, so I would say one is caring about humanity. Two is caring about the planet. You know, three is questioning authority. What I mean, where are
you
at?
I mean, no, to me, like when you ask that question, what are revolutionary values? The only thing that comes to my head is love.
Of course it is.
All of the other stuff is basically just different forms of love.
Right. And it's just showing love to specific subsets.
Yeah. It's like courage is just loving yourself enough to
stand up for yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, creativity is just, you know, love, which is, you
manifested
know,
through some medium of art. Yeah.
Exactly. You know, so it's, yeah. So thank you for asking me about this because it's just getting me really clear that that's what it is.
Right.
You know? And then, of course, there's this like somewhat ego part of myself that's like, I mean, my daughter is so cool. Already.
She is incredibly cool. She's like, specifically cool.
Yeah. But she's kind of, like, she's kind of like me. She's kind of a spaz, and she's kind of like a happy, spazzy kid.
Yeah.
You know, who's so, oh, she's just like, I can't even, I just feel so lucky, you know? And so part of me is like, you know, like, essentially what I've done in my life is, like, for the most part, followed my beliefs and trusted myself. And like, I basically made up my own job.
Right.
You know, I've like made up my own job and it's basically the same thing I was doing in fourth grade, you know, but it's just gotten, I've gotten like more and more, you know, better iterations of it. And so to where, you know, what I'm doing now, what Game Changer Labs is basically like working with everyone to try to imagine how to make our movement better, to make the world better. That's right. Like basically what I get to do every day.
Right.
Like wake up and be like, what's needed in the world? Who has crazy ideas? Like, let's make it all happen.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I mean, like, I couldn't imagine a better job and life, you know, at least for me.
Right.
You know, and but that's something like no one has ever like told me that I could do that.
Right.
It's not, that's not a job, you know, that like is out there. There wasn't even an organization that's like has the mission to do that in the entire nonprofit world of like hundreds of thousands of nonprofits.
Right.
You know? And so I kind of had to like make it up and really believe and trust myself and my instincts and my, and I do want that for her. Like I do want her to, you know, because most of what people end up doing as like careers or professions or whatever is like, oh, which of these boxes can I fit in? You know, like, and it's kind of like based on like fear and insecurity and like following the rules.
Right. And like, you know, status quo structure, something that you can wrap your head around. And
yeah. And that's, you know, and that's what, you know, and it's easier to do that. Like it's scary and hard to like have to make it up yourself because you don't feel like any of the things out there are quite right.
Right.
You know? And so whatever she chooses, I do want that for her.
Right.
You know? Like it's not actually crazy to think that she might want to do some version of the same thing I'm doing.
Right.
Which is like totally like love-based, trusting herself. What is going on in the world? What is this crazy madness that is going on in the world? What are the best things I can do about it? What do I love to do every day? You know, and what are my superpowers? And like trust them and like find the resources and like be able to do that all the time.
Yeah.
Like that's a fucking great job.
Yeah.
You know, like whatever version of that. And so there's part of me that like, you know, that wants that for her. And part of that is like, you know, my own ego, which is like, well, I'm doing this awesome thing, so yeah, obviously, like, she should join the family business. You know?
Well, I mean, I think it's kind of interesting because you talked before about this idea of self-love, and I know that, you know, as a thoughtful, philosophical person, you're going to question your own ego and motivation, but I also think there's an element of, like, you love yourself and you love what you're doing, and that makes it so... You wanting your kid to be like you doesn't necessarily have to just be ego. It also is like, hey, I like myself. I'd like for you to be like me because I'm dope. Which I think is like, okay. Yeah. I think if everybody felt that way in like a genuine, not like in this, you know, there's such a difference between like being conceited or like being like overly humble to the point where you're just self-deprecating. I mean, those are both incredibly dangerous places to be. And to be able to say, like, I like what I'm doing, I like who I am, even that is a revolutionary act. Like, you don't hear that a lot from people.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, just to go back to my own parents, like, the truth is, like, my parents loved me so much. Like, I totally knew, like, at every moment, like, my parents loved me.
Yeah.
You know? Like, I felt, so many kids don't have that and don't get that.
Yeah.
And even when they like hated me, you know,
you still knew
ruining their life.
Yeah.
You know, I totally knew they loved me and ultimately, you know, I did all the wrong things. Like I dropped out of college and I, you know, and whatever, but they, you know, they've adapted. Like my parents have adapted to me in incredible ways. Like, you know, like, they've basically become quasi activists, you know?
Right.
From in part from like raising me and like being moved by seeing what I was doing and trying to like learn about and care about what I was. And then they started reading The Nation magazine and like, oh, wow, like the government's lying to us and we have to fight back.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So and my mom especially has like totally basically become an activist now.
Wow.
You know, in her 70s.
Wow.
You know, and like, and so much of that was like allowing herself to like, you know, feel like it was okay. I mean, she had those instincts with her all along, but in some ways, like me doing it and like being relatively successful at it has given her permission to feel, you know, like it's an actual legitimate thing to do with oneself.
You know? And I think, you know, one of the overarching themes that I'm getting from this conversation is that truth and love are contagious, you know, and the more that we pursue them both, the more influence we'll have on people. And, you know, I think one of the things that's hard about parenting is that we look for specific answers because we do live in this, you know, specific moment. And it's hard to just be like, just love your kid, man, because that's so esoteric and it's so vague. And so it's almost like we all crave this instruction manual because we come, most of us like come from some sort of broken place or have some sort of pain that we're dealing with. Yes. And so to just like blanketly feel these evolved emotions is difficult and complex. But even though this is like vague and esoteric advice, I still think the metaphysical idea of just like truth and love and having that be what we pursue, that is how we're going to raise our kids to be revolutionary.
Yeah. And okay, I love this. So yeah. And my mom was also really into truth. Like my mom like is real talk lady, you know, she cannot hold back if she thinks something. So I think, so you just gave me an idea. It's like I feel like I like have totally transformed my parents' lives. Like having me has been, you know, this thing that has been so incredible and transformative for them. And like, it's like, I think I want to like convey that to my daughter.
Yeah.
You know, like I transformed my parents' lives.
And I'm ready for you to be my teacher.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, you know, and I mean, I can already imagine her like judging like how bad I am at recycling, you know, like on a good day I'm good, but like not always, you know?
Right.
And like all these, like I can just, and you know, this is all me projecting at this point. Like actually like right after the State of the Union address, like my daughter just started crying, you know? And I was like, yeah, it's cause she like Obama isn't going to do enough about the climate, you know? Like you should be crying, you know, like I get it, you know, like, I don't know. And so obviously like she doesn't know about that stuff yet. So she's probably not crying about,
but it feels in the quantum universe. Why, you know, why wouldn't she?
Yeah.
At the same time, as much as we could say that's a coincidence, we could also say it's not. And she could also be weeping for her future.
Yeah. Yeah. And for like, yeah, I mean, yeah. So who knows? I mean, I don't know enough about child development to know if there could be something to that. But I feel like on a spiritual level,
there's something to it.
There's something to it. You know, like we are in a place of like, you know, intense, you know, I mean, if the like problem of Western civilization is people's like separation from themselves, each other, and nature,
right?
You know, we're in an intense place with that in world history.
Oh yeah,
that is coming,
I mean, disconnected on.
Yeah, that's coming to a scary, you know, that's getting scarier and scarier.
Yeah,
in terms of like the implications for 7 billion people on a small planet, you know, that we're not evolved enough to like take care of yet. So, you know. So on the other side, like my daughter is going to have to be like a warrior for love and revolution of, and revolution, which is an evolution of human consciousness,
right,
to figure out how to survive and flourish in this like increasingly apocalyptic world that we live in.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, like I'm like I like see her in a movie in the future, like,
and like Mad Max in the Thunderdome, she's like wearing leather and like a weird, like,
no, she's not, my daughter's
yak sack.
Not wearing,
oh yeah, sorry, she's wearing
leather.
She's wearing renewable resources.
No, but like You know, and one thing, so my wife Lenore was, you never know this, because she's like, you know, Italian, and, you know, she doesn't seem like she's a super vegetarian, but she's like, she was totally raised vegetarian, but like, she's literally never had meat in her whole life.
Oh, wow.
And so, and she's totally healthy, you know? So she's actually like a good role model of like a lifelong vegetarian. And she like has no interest in eating meat.
Right.
You know, and she's like traveled all over Latin America and somehow survived. I don't know how. So we're raising our daughter completely vegetarian, you know? So I think that there's this poem that really moves me by this young father, who's like a spoken word artist in Denver, who, oh God, what was it? It's something like, she's too good for me, you know? And there's this whole song that sounds like he's talking about a woman, but he's talking about his daughter. Like,
oh, yeah.
Or like, I could never be good enough for you, you know?
I love that.
Oh God. And it's so how I feel, you know, it's like, you know, I kind of began this interview, and most of where I like operate from day to day is just like parent survival. It's like, oh, I'm not doing good enough or whatever. Or just surviving the day to day, or not actually thinking like big about parenting,
right,
and about life and about this child, you know? So that I feel like there's small parenting and there's big parenting.
Yeah, I like that distinction. Yeah,
it's like small parenting is like what we're mostly in, but I want to live in big parenting.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Which is like experiencing and giving like the big love, the big vision, like the big wonder.
You know, it's like what you were kind of talking about in the beginning. It's like to not get bogged down. Like, part of our parenting journey isn't just to see it as this day by day. I'm just doing the best I can every day, and then my kid's going to like grow up and go away. It's like, no, you're raising a human who most of your life together, you're both going to be adults. You're going to be intellectual peers on some level.
Right.
You know, and it's like, I want to raise someone who I can be friends with and I have common interests with and I want to spend time with, you know, because childhood is so fleeting, but the adult you become is the true connection, you know, between us. And so I think that, you know, this is a really good thing that we can encourage people to remember is the big P of parenting, and you're raising the friend you're going to have.
Yeah. And so just to say more about that, like to me, being a parent isn't just being, it's actually a mentality that's not just about you're parenting this child. It is a mentality in the world.
Yeah.
You know, it's like everyone are my children.
Yeah.
And I am the child of everyone, you know, or I don't know if that makes sense, but like, yeah, like when you're a child, you're everyone's child. And when you're a parent, you're everyone's parent.
Yeah. Now I get what you're saying now. Yeah.
And like living like that, like, you know, seeing other kids and seeing other people as like, you know, loving them the way you love your child.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I love that.
And so, and I feel like that's such an incredible way to go through life. Like that is how I want to go through life.
Right.
Is like, loving other people the way I love my child and treating people the way I would want someone to treat my, like, I've never loved anyone like I love my child.
Nah.
You know, and so that's the standard.
Yeah. And it's like, it's funny when you think about activism.
And I deserve that love.
You deserve it. And when you think about activism or revolutionary acts, a lot of times people are like, oh, I don't have time for that. I don't have time to volunteer, or I have a job, or like I'm bogged down by all these other, you know, systemic things that I have to take care of. I don't have time to be an activist. But what you do have time for is to have these values in your life and your parenting and your friendships. So it's like, even if you're not volunteering or being politically active, or even if you don't want to vote, you can still be an activist by being this way towards each other.
But you know what it is? Yes. Yes, yes, yes. And it's like, it's about having a sense of abundance.
Yeah.
As opposed to scarcity. Like what I was talking about before was the war of scarcity. Mm. You know, that's like sleep, baby, work, partner, you know. That's like a
YouTube videos mentality, time. Yeah.
You know? And like I could live in scarcity mentality for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
There is scarcity. Like that's I'm talking about all this love stuff. People are like, what the hell are you talking about? Like I'm in pain. I'm in, you know, like hurt, you know, that's all real.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that's not real. That is so real. That's like, that is the reality as most of us experience it day to day. If we don't flip the switch and realize abundance mode.
Yeah. Yeah.
There are two modes. Scarcity mode and abundance mode. Small parenting, big parenting. And big parenting is awesome.
Yeah.
Because, you know? Because love is so big that when we tap into it and own it, it transforms everything. Mm-hmm. Like, it literally changes the game.
Yeah.
Of everything, you know? It even changes, like, changing diapers.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, it goes from being a chore to being, like, this intimate experience with your child.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's like, it's incredibly intimate changing diapers. You know, it's like.
It's so trusting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's like.
I'm helping you.
Yeah.
And it's. Yeah. And oh, it's making me sad. Yeah. The partnership of it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, then there's all the other aspects of it.
Yeah. But,
which are also real. But it's like. You know, and like all these things are so incredibly intimate and beautiful. You know, it's just.
And
like,
fleeting.
Like my daughter wants to be held. She just wants to be held and loved.
Yeah.
And then let go and do her own thing. But it's like, it reminds you of what we really are.
Mm-hmm.
Because what what my daughter wants is food, clothing, you know.
Love, affection.
I was going to say milk. But love.
Yeah.
You know, she wants love and attention and care and fun.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we're made of. That's the human condition. That's what we all want and need all the time.
Yeah.
We're just like.
She doesn't want money or power.
Well, yeah, it's interesting. She wants stuff, but she doesn't necessarily, I think, want to own it long term necessarily.
Yeah.
She wants to experience
it. She wants access of it. Yeah.
You know? Like, but yeah. So it's like, but it's okay. So I don't know. So imagine a society based on that.
Right. If we all just looked at the base needs and values of a child and maintained those, we would have a much different culture because I mean, the reason why I brought up money and power is because money and power is what is destroying the planet. Money and power is what we go to war for. Money and power
right.
is like why we are sustaining this system that is right. imploding upon itself.
Right.
It's all about money and power,
right.
you know, and it's like children, they don't, especially when you see them in their, you know, their most true selves, that's not a concern of theirs.
Right. Right. I'm trying to like. Square what you're saying with the fact that my daughter wants to grab everything and wants everything.
But that's curiosity. And right. like, and I like what you said. It's like she doesn't want to keep it forever.
Right.
She just is like curious about the world around you. That's her learning. That's her just like, hey, what's that? I want access to that. I want to understand that. But yeah. but maybe you're bringing up a good point. It's like that idea of like money and power and ownership and like touching, maybe that is just as base as everything else. And
yeah.
the problem is that it's the consequences are so much more dire. Like maybe we all yeah. have that desire to want to be powerful and to want stuff. But the problem right. is that we're adults and we're conscious beings and we should have that more in check.
Right. Well, no, I have a slightly different.
Yeah, I want to hear it.
I think we're mostly saying the same thing, but I feel like. Like she wants something, and if she doesn't get it, she's gonna cry,
she's
gonna try to grab it. And
yeah.
if someone else grabs it, she's gonna be angry and cry and try to grab it from them and hit them.
Yeah,
you know that's real.
Yeah,
you know that is also real. And how do we? So the question is, how do we channel that? How do we channel what we really are?
Yeah.
Into a culture and a way of being and a civilization that can survive.
Yeah.
Now that we have nuclear weapons and the ability to play God and destroy the planet and each other.
Yeah.
You know, like, how do we? Yeah. So, in short, I feel like each child and parenting each child is a microcosm of what we need to do with ourselves, with our community, and with our world and our civilization.
Right.
You know, and it's like the evolution of that is also the evolution. Yeah. So basically, it's all right there.
Yeah.
And why what upsets me is this feeling, or is this like perception that, like, quote unquote, activism or whatever is this separate thing. Or, you know, or is this like, it's kind of its own like ghetto of stuff that people mostly avoid and don't want to deal with or
right.
talk about, or that just feels like even when I hear the word activism, I picture this stereotypical two-dimensional thing that I don't like.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I don't like that. I don't want to be associated with that. That's not like, that's not something I want. You know, it seems like. It's actually something I want to get away from.
Right.
You know what I mean?
And right.
So we have to like totally rethink how we talk and even think about this stuff, because it's like the like Christian evangelicals have something called the creation care movement.
Yeah.
You know, which is what we would call environmental activism.
Right.
You know, but it's actually, for me, it's the right frame. Like, I actually think a lot of the like evangelical right, you know, Christian right folks have much better framing and language, you know, like life. I mean, like, who would not want to be part of the pro-life movement?
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. And like family and values and, you know, and I feel like we've let them like own these frames, like life and freedom.
Yeah.
You know, that are like that mean actually more to me than activism and progressive, you know.
Yeah.
Like I actually think they have better frames and that's what I want to do. Like, I want to be like part of a pro-life, love God, freedom movement.
Right.
that sounds good to me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
But the way it's actualized is different.
Right.
And I mean, I think, you know, it's like what we were talking about beforehand and what we were grappling with is like there is this human nature that is part of it is selfish and part of it is about ownership and part of it is about looking out for oneself, which is what selfish means. So whatever, that's redundant. But I guess like what I'm trying to say is that, you know, that's the challenge that we have as parents is acknowledging that human nature isn't good or bad. It just is. We don't have to necessarily espouse values onto it, but what's important is encouraging, you know, the behavior that is more considerate of other people and more considerate of the planet, because these other instincts are always going to be a part of us, but these more, you know, love-based, trust-based, these are the instincts that we have to cultivate, and we have to nurture, and we have to water them.
Yes, we have to water them.
Yes. Okay, before we end, I need to ask you two questions.
No, we can never end.
I know, I never want to stop talking. I wanted to ask you, one, what is your greatest fear as a parent? And two, what is your all-time favorite moment thus far?
Wow. Oh, that's so good. Well, the first thing that came to my mind as greatest fear is just like her falling off the bed head first, which is like...
Like, totally legit.
That's kind of the stage we're at right yeah. now is like I'm always grabbing her before she like falls off onto her head. And like I feel like it's a miracle. Like my child hasn't gotten seriously injured in like our first 9 months. I'm like, how am I such a good parent that I haven't like
dropped you yet? Or
yeah.
Yeah.
Like, but and that and like. I'm shocked that like I haven't dropped her downstairs several times, you know?
Yeah.
Like, and whatever, that doesn't make you a bad parent at all. Like that is like, you know, it's, I feel shockingly lucky, you know, that because like everyone I know has like dropped their kid down the stairs. But I feel like, yeah, so it's that's the fear, is just like doing anything
that could hurt her physically. That
could hurt her physically or emotionally or otherwise, you know, like sometimes like I'll be on my phone, you know, and it's so clear. She's like, so like, why am I not getting the attention? Like, I want the phone. I want you to pay attention to me instead of the phone.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, it's so visceral.
Yeah.
You know, and it's so upsetting that like already 9 months old, she's like, she has a relationship with this phone mm-hmm. that's like, I'm trying to keep away from her and her and my laptop, you
right.
know?
Right.
She's like, you know, she's actually succeeded in like typing on it a couple times, like, you know, and maybe it's fine. Maybe it's not that bad, but it just feels upsetting.
I know what you mean. Sometimes, you know? Adelia, she'll like, we'll be playing and she has a little tiny computer. And she'll be like, I'm busy. I'm on my computer. And she'll like be typing away. And she yeah. won't have time for me. And I'm like,
oh my God.
Wah, wah.
I love it. Yeah. No, but I mean, I think every parent I know has the same, like, you know, dynamics.
Right.
So it's like, it's what our generation.
Yeah. We're grappling with. I mean, that's a whole
and I work
conversation
from home
in and of itself.
Yeah. So. I think,
and then your best parenting moment so
oh
far.
Oh God! Oh my God! It's just like just you saying that, just everything. It's like, okay, so, on my birthday, which is when she was like a little, I don't know how old she was, but. She said, dad, 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 dad. And I was like, oh, my God. And, of course, like, she doesn't really know that I'm dad, dad.
Yeah.
She's just saying that. But it was just like, you know, that was just like one.
Little gift.
You know, and like just now, like this. So she just learned to clap.
Mm-hmm.
And Lenore, you know, and so, you know, you go like, you know, clap to get her clapping. But Lenore was like. Clap, Analia, you know, without the like physical prompt, and she started clapping, and we just looked at each other and we're like, oh my God, our child is under, and I was like, oh my God, our child is understanding way more than we realize, like
yeah.
she knows the word clap,
yeah,
like how many other words does she know? And then it just makes you realize like, oh my God, this child is taking in
everything. Yeah
Wow. Tony, thank you for this. This is so, like, everyone should get to like be in conversations like this and get listened to and like get to talk about and dream about this stuff and like big parenting, like that's hot.
That's hot.
You
this
know
is
I'm
why
saying?
I'm hot and that's hot. We should write a book about it.
Big parenting.
Big parenting with a big capital P.
And you know, it can say like big pimping, but the pimping can be crossed out.
Oh my God, I love that. It's a great idea. We'll be spreading cheese, but in a different way. Not birth cheese. Well, thank you so much, Billy. It was amazing talking to you.
Thank you.
This is a wonderful conversation. Thank you so
Thank
much.
You. And I hope everyone listening is getting to really enjoy your parenting, even when it sucks.
Even when it sucks, which is every day. It sucks for a minute at least.
True.
All right. Thank you so much.
Bye.
Bye.